mean, our goal is liberation. Our goal is communism.
Мира и счастья всем вам, друзья мои.
And, you know, we have a unique responsibility to act from the heart of empire, the belly of the beast. The most important thing that we can do is take that empire down from within.
Our role ultimately is to facilitate our own empire's failure in ways that we can, ultimately to overthrow our own empire.
U.S. imperialism is not a thing that can be reformed away. It has to be overthrown through revolutionary struggle.
And to build a mass movement that can use the leverage of workers to hit the kill switch on American imperialism here within the American empire.
Our candidates run as Democrats. We're on the Democratic Party ballot line. We contest the primaries. And when they're in the legislature, they're part of the Democratic Party caucus. But we don't agree with the way the Democratic Party establishment organizes or runs its party apparatus.
It's no secret that the Democratic Socialists of America hate the Democratic Party.
I think we're all on the same page that we hate the Democratic Party.
The Democratic Party is not really our friend. It isn't.
So why are the DSA such major players in the Democratic Party? This odd relationship can be understood with the cuckoo analogy. In nature, the cuckoo survives by trickery. It lays its egg in another bird's nest. The unsuspecting parents raise the imposter as their own until the cuckoo grows strong enough to push the true chicks out. The DSA is the cuckoo inside the Democratic Party.
DSA is not the Democratic Party.
We must separate ourselves from the toxic Democratic Party.
We can put forward a clear, aggressive, principled strategy that pushes back against the Democratic leadership and the Democratic Party as a whole.
DSA candidates run as Democrats in safe blue districts. They slip through low turnout primaries. And once inside, they use the Democratic label as camouflage while advancing an extremist anti-American agenda far beyond the party's mainstream.
Democrat Socialists of America meeting in Denver, more than half of them are wearing the mask. They also look completely deranged. It looks like another Antifa convention or something. And it's very, very sad. But you have to understand the psychology of people. They believe they're really going to get a free lunch. So they're already primed to be in a cult. And just like the Nazis wore an armband, these people have purple-green hair, you know, look super unhealthy, take SSRIs, take all the deadly shots, and wear the mask because it is a sacrament that they basically buy into the system and whatever it says. I mean, right out of the corporate media, right out of the universities, right out of BlackRock, whatever BlackRock pushes in their ESG scores, most powerful, richest consortium on Earth, 87% of world assets, they follow it to a T.
You have to force behaviors. And if you don't force behaviors, whether it's gender or race or just any way you want to say the composition of your team, you're going to be impacted.
So there they are wearing their masks that don't protect you. They always knew it gives you bacterial pneumonia. There they are completely buying into the system. And you just see how desperate they are, looking like total victims, totally lost, believing that Mondami and all these people are going to give them something free. For a little while, they'll get something free here and there, but it's only transfer power into the state.
DSA victories prove their plan works.
I think that the model that we used in New York is 100% replicatable.
But it's the illusion that they're getting something free they like. Just like people buy lottery tickets, even though it's one of the worst investments you can engage in. It's the same thing as people going to casinos. You know, the house in the end always wins in the aggregate. So it's a big problem. And of course, the fact that we have a crony capitalist system that's vertically integrated, run by the very same people pushing communism.
It's our duty, DSA, to cultivate this power.
The cuckoo is in the nest, not a Democrat, but Zohran Mamdani, an extremist within the DSA.
We understand that winning an election is not an end. It is a means to an end.
These corporate fascists who've consolidated the wealth of 1%, like 1/100th of 1%, people think that this is capitalism we're under when it's really monopoly, oligopoly, and where's Teddy Roosevelt to bust up the trust when you need him?
Nice try, globalist, but Alex Jones is still here, and he's not f***ing leaving.
Do not help fund the resistance. You sit comfortably. You consume. You watch. You wait for others to fight the battle for you. The dark side has you firmly in its grasp. Every day, you remain on the sidelines. My power grows stronger. Continue believing someone else will save the galaxy. It pleases me greatly.
Real time, uncensored, unstoppable. AlexJonesLive.com. Take a stand. Share the link.
Do you want to fight? You better believe you got one!
Nothing can stop me. The Force lies within.
There is no escape from what you are becoming. Lay down your weapon or be destroyed.
All right, welcome back, folks. This is War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. I want to go down to a video of Todd Blanche, clip 34 here. This is him testifying under oath about the Epstein files. And we'll take a listen here, but I think he's going to lie about it, because the law that was passed said they had to put out the Epstein files. They were only allowed to redact things for certain, either national security, you know, sources, revelations, or, you know, they didn't want to reveal innocent people without actually accusing them of a crime. But if they were going to redact anything, they needed to provide to Congress the reason why they were redacting it, to show that the reason they were redacting it was in line with the prescribed appropriate reasons to redact something. They instead redacted things that had Trump's name in it, redacted things they just felt would look unfavorable to them. That's illegal. They broke the law. Who's going to hold them to account when they're the guardians of the law? That's the question. Here is Todd Blanche, who just received a ringing endorsement from Donald Trump for all the great work he's done. Here's him explaining some of that great work. Let's watch.
How many more pages are there?
That are responsive? We're not aware of any.
How about that in the department's opinion are not responsive?
Well, from what we collected, about 3 million that were just nothing to do with Jeffrey Epstein or the case at all.
Okay. Why don't you just release everything? Just let it rip.
Well, that would be against the law, because the only reason we could release the 3 million we did is because of the Epstein Transparency Act. There are federal laws that prohibit the release of case files, and the Epstein Transparency Act was very explicit and specific about what could be and should be released.
Other than to himself, well, first, we can agree, can we not?
Yeah, so it'd be illegal for me to comply with the orders of Congress. I don't believe you. I mean, we there's no way that's true. They're lying. They're lying. They're withholding the Epstein files. They're breaking their own law. This actually is the death of democracy. Now, for all of the crying and rending of clothing over January 6th, the actual death of democracy is when you actually go through the appropriate procedure to pass a law and the executive just decides they don't want to. Why? Because they're perhaps included in some of the criminal activity inside the files. That's the death of democracy. That's the death of not democracy, really, because we're not a democracy. Our Republican system of checks and balances, the actual thing we should be concerned about preserving, but that is being ever disintegrated right before us. We got a lot of political news to talk about, as well as, of course, the Iran war. Iran, U.S. has begun a new wave of strikes on Iran. These strikes are designed to further degrade military capabilities Iranian forces have used to attack commercial shipping in the Strait of Hormuz, U.S. Central Command said in a post on X. The Reuters Iran briefing is where this is from. Can we just stop already, like, for the love of God? I just don't understand what the point of any of this is. We've not achieved any of our objectives. Those objectives seem to be getting further and further away. And at a certain point, we're just going to have to call it. Like, what are we waiting for exactly? I don't understand what we're waiting for. Should we dig in a little bit more to this Time article? Because we only touched on it yesterday, but there's a ton of very interesting information in it. Trump's ex-campaign manager is running an Israeli influence operation targeting the MAGA base. After the U.S. and Iran agreed to a ceasefire deal on June 17th, a senior U.S. official was monitoring the online reaction, and they noticed something surprising. President Trump's aides had expected his supporters to celebrate the agreement. Instead, online influencers in Trump's MAGA movement were excoriating it on social media. One shared an Israeli op-ed titled, "You could have been the greatest president of all, but you failed." Several posted the same video of Qatar's prime minister appearing to snub J.D. Vance in Israel, arguing it showed regional powers dismissing the Trump administration's naivete. Others accused Trump of surrendering before achieving his stated objectives of eliminating Iran's nuclear program. Many of the posts appeared almost simultaneously with similarities in language and tone. The official began collecting screenshots and came to believe that this wasn't a coincidence. Tracing tweets by prominent members of the online right, the official came to believe there was an unlikely figure at the center of all the criticism, Trump's former campaign manager and digital guru, Brad Parscale. Last September, the global ad agency Havas hired Parscale's firm, Clock Tower X, to conduct a digital campaign on behalf of the State of Israel, according to Foreign Agents Registration Act, FARA filings reviewed by Time. Under the agreement, Parscale's operation would produce 100 original pieces of content each month, with at least 80% aimed at Generation Z audiences across TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and podcasts. In a services agreement draft included in the filing, Parscale also pledged to amplify the campaigns across social media and through integration of narrative messaging into Salem Media Network properties and aligned distribution channels, referring to the Christian Conservative Broadcasting and Publishing Company, where he serves as chief strategy officer. Parscale vowed the effort would produce at least 50 million digital impressions per month, as well as influence how AI tools such as OpenAI, ChatGPT, Anthropic's Claude, and Google's Gemini characterized Israel and the war. For all this, Israel agreed to pay Clock Tower $1.5 million per month. Now, is any of this going to actually lower anti-Semitism? Probably not. If anything, it's only confirming the most anti-Semitic tropes and conspiracy theories that exist out there, including the fact that AI is being manipulated by them to be on their side, when in reality it should just be a truth machine. Then talks about some of the people involved in this, including Ayel Jacoby. Three people familiar with the campaign describes a messaging operation run through a network of interconnected firms seen by Parscale or other firms he owned or created, such as Campaign Nucleus and Influenceable, in which he now owns a minority stake. Through private group chats, they say, conservative influencers received suggested language for posts on social media sites such as X, Instagram, and TikTok. They were compensated based on impressions and engagement their content generated. On the website, Clock Tower X says it developed an influencer ecosystem that includes managed networks that amplify narratives through credible, distributed voices. It remains unclear how much Parscale's outfits paid creators as part of the Israeli campaign. Another recent Influenceable campaign offered influencers a base payment of $2,250 plus $1 for every 1,000 views up to 2 million views, allowing influencers to earn as much as $4,250 per post, according to internal text messages reviewed by Time. People who participated, most of whom asked for anonymity, fearing reprisals, rejected the suggestion that there was anything improper about the practice. Parscale said none of the money from the FARA registered contract had been used to pay influencers, arguing that doing so would require them to disclose the source of their funding. He says other Christian organizations hired his firms, such as Influenceable, to support Israel in the wake of October 7th attacks, but declined to identify them. So you're making over $4,000 per post if you get enough impressions. But here's the key with this. You use your influencer networks to maximize impressions. So, and here's a little behind the scenes secret for you. Here's how we operate behind the scenes. I'll tell you this with complete honesty. The only time I've ever, to my knowledge, or to my memory, like, I put stuff out there, and my sort of philosophy is like, if it's good, people will see it, they'll share it, they'll get it around. I don't like asking for help. I don't like
asking people to share stuff. I never do. When I made the Eighth Front documentary, I really wanted it to do well. So I sent it out to everyone I knew with a account over 100,000 and was like, please, please share this. I worked really hard on it and I think you'd enjoy it. And they did. Luckily, I didn't have to pay them anything or anything. They liked the content and shared it, you know, on their own volition. You know, I didn't have to pay them or anything. But how do you think it got to, what's it at now, 22 million views? That's how. So when you're talking about these networks and making posts, it's not like they're just paying for people to make posts that independently or, and organically get really popular. You make a post and then you send it out to everyone else, you know, and you have a combined following of like 100 million people, you can rack up views pretty quickly. But I want to explain like what's, but why would they actually do this? Why would they actually pay for this? Is this actually helping, do you think? Is one post worth $4,000? Probably not. I mean, how convincing could it possibly be? And is engagement really the thing that you value the most? Because I could say something incredibly stupid and offensive, and it would get a lot of engagement. It just wouldn't help your cause at all. So how do you determine whether it's actually helping your cause if all you're judging it by is the engagement? That'd be an easy way to, I don't know, get a bunch of money just by causing problems and strife. But I think the key here is when it comes to I.L. Jacoby and what he says about it, this tells you what the real value is and what they're really paying for by running this. They, because as I.L. Jacoby, I think I'm pronouncing that right, but I also don't care. What he says, I think, is absolutely true. He basically said, well, I'll just read it. One of the conservative figures associated with the campaign was I.L. Jacoby, a recent college grad with a popular X account who began working with one of Parscale's firms about a year ago. He says, after testifying before a House committee about anti-Semitism on college campuses, Jacoby says neither Influenceable or any other firm has ever compensated him to promote views he did not already hold. It's not like an agency that represents you, he says. An official with Influenceable says Jacoby had participated in numerous campaigns on issues related to Israel. I.L. Jacoby has worked with Influenceable as a paid influencer, but never on behalf of the Israeli government. The executive says, insisting none of their influencers have been paid with foreign money, Jacoby declined to comment further. So when he says that he holds the views already, I think he's probably telling the truth. The question is, why would they pay him to post stuff that he would post already without their payment? And it's because it's not necessarily about getting people to support, to express support for Israel. It's about pushing a unified message, whatever that message happens to be. It's not enough that people are against the Iran MOU. They have to all be expressing the exact same outrage about the MOU. It's less about getting the message out as it is about consolidating the message, unifying or directing the messaging. So it's not so much they had to convince people who either don't care or anti-Israel, well, we'll pay you to be pro-Israel. It's paying pro-Israel people to coordinate their messaging across the board and do it in a secretive way where they're not actively communicating with each other. And so it gives the appearance of all these different people from all across this broad spectrum of influencers all happen to have exactly the same reading of the situation. That's how you manipulate the masses. That's how you, you know, shape public perception about an idea. You have the same idea expressed over and over again from a bunch of different people who seemingly don't have much in common. And we've explained this with other, you know, known Israeli subversive right-wing so-called influencers. In the Lobby documentary, we talked about how they were running Facebook groups where the Facebook group would be about cats or about coffee, and they would do this. And it was like a full-time job to run one of these super popular Facebook groups. And they were every day uploading content about coffee and cats, and they kept it going and they built a real community. And then every like 10 or 20 posts would just be a little post about like, oh, by the way, we stand with Israel. The point of that being that you're not convincing anybody with that single post. And the coffee or cat lover market is not a demographic that they're desperate to corner. What they want to do is put across the perception that normal people from all walks of life just, you know, occasionally express their support of Israel. And there's nothing weird about that. And there's nothing, you know, abnormal about that.
This is just what happens. You know, everybody supports Israel. That's why the coffee people you're following, they're for Israel, and the cat people are for Israel. They're actually agents of the Israeli government being paid to create that perception in your mind. This is the way psychological operations actually operate. It is less about the individual post than it is about the wide swath of posts all using the same word, the same keyword, the same phrase, the same concept, a concept or a phrase or a keyword that has been A/B tested by the ADL, where they run workshops where they say, well, which sounds better? Should we say that this is bad because it's America losing and we don't want America humiliated? So, you know, we don't want to surrender. This makes Trump look weak. Like, how effective is that? And they A/B test it. Maybe they run some, you know, AI simulations, or maybe they, you know, like on YouTube, if you upload a YouTube video, you can put two different titles with two different thumbnails and it will post both of them. And whichever one does better, it'll make the permanent one. So they do that. They have workshops and, you know, infinite money and to hire people to run these things. It's the same thing you do when you're coming out with a new flavor of soda. You have a, you know, consumer sit there and test it and tell you what they think and give you feedback, or a movie. That's why movies suck now to a large degree, because you have test audiences. So they have test audiences. They test the effectiveness of certain arguments. What you'll recognize is none of this has anything to do with what's best for America or the truth. That never even enters into the conversation. It's about how do we persuade people? What's the best messaging? How do we convince people of this? It has absolutely nothing. And it actually has a, I guess you could say, a adversarial relationship with the truth, the metaphysical reality that we all exist in. So again, I'm, that's why it's worth it to them. That's why they pay so much. It's not about the individual post. They know that nobody's being convinced by Eyal Yacobi. But if Eyal Yacobi posts something and he's using the right keywords and he's phrasing it in the right way and he does it in a way that, you know, they find effective, then they have that post shared by a whole bunch of other people. And again, it gives it the impression of and the semblance of organic popularity, when really it's a giant scam. It's either one person with a bunch of bots, or it's a bunch of people who are paid to do it. It's astroturfed. It's like when they pump in crowd noise at a concert, or, you know, anything like that. It's creating a false reality in which Israel is popular and doing the right thing. The Parscale-led effort continues, but neither the Trump administration nor the Israelis appear happy about how it's going. You can just stop killing people. Feel free to stop killing people at any time, and then you don't need to spend another single dollar on convincing people you're not as bad as you actually are. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's government had hired Parscale to improve the nation's standing among conservatives, only to watch the support continue to erode on the American right and across the broader U.S. electorate. We are pissed at Brad Parscale, says the Israeli official familiar with the arrangement. Why would anybody work with Israelis? Oh my God, they're just awful. It's like, here, you have to improve our reputation, but also we're not going to stop betraying America, killing innocent people, annexing the West Bank. You know, they just poured like $30 billion into here. $400 million just got sent from the Israeli government to the terrorist settlers in the West Bank. It's like, you have to improve our reputation, but we're going to keep just being the worst people in the world. We're going to continue to murder innocent people at a industrial scale. And if you can't make people love us, then you're a bastard. Then we hate you. Then you, it's your fault. It's Brad Parscale's fault that everyone hates Israel. And it's just like, you signed a contract with these people? Why? Why did you do that? Who convinced you? What psychological operation were you subjected to that made you think you should sign a contract with these people? My God. He was supposed to make things better. We've paid him lots of money. And what did he do with it? Things have only gotten worse. Oh, they just keep getting worse. It's like you are actively strangling a child right now. You're saying this, but as I look at you, you're strangling a child to death right now. Just like that Brad Parscale. It's his fault everybody hates us. Give me the next one. Next Palestinian child I want to strangle to death. My anxiety. I'm verklempt. I need to kill children. My God. My God. Only 32% of Americans now view the Israeli government favorably, the lowest level in decades. What a coincidence. What a coincidence that happened to happen 2 years after you started a genocide. What are the odds? Parscale insists his initiative has been working. The purpose of this campaign was to prevent the enemies of Israel and the West from driving a wedge between Israel and the Americans who have traditionally supported it, particularly on the political right, as they've already succeeded in doing among significant portions of the left. Like, do you see that these people are operating in an unreality? They're not on Earth. I don't know where the hell they think they are. But did you get the implication there? Did you understand the underlying sentiment behind what I just read? I'll say it again. The purpose of this campaign was to prevent the enemies of Israel and the West from driving a wedge between Israel and the Americans, as they have succeeded in doing among significant portions of the left. You're telling me, Brad Parscale, that you think the reason people don't like Israel is because the left has driven a wedge, because it's a propaganda campaign, a successful Muslim psyop to convince people that Israel's bad? Why do you think you're losing? It's like, you want to know why you're losing? It's right here. This is it. This is why you're losing. This is why the PR isn't working. Because you live in a fantasy world, in an imagined simulacrum in which the American people are just mindless NPCs that just so happened to be appealed to first by the Muslims, so that's who they're going with. And if you could just appeal to them more, then they'll just go with you. And it's not like we have thoughts. It's not like we're responding to a situation in reality that we're observing with our own eyes and that we have principled moral objections to. No, no, no. It's enemies of the West have driven a wedge because they hate Israel, and they want us to hate Israel too, because they understand that Israel is so important to our survival. Like, what is going on in their minds? What is happening in Brad Parscale's mind? You have to wonder, because it's statements like that that explain that you will never succeed in making Israel popular, because you do not have the humility to recognize what's made it hated in the first place. How are you ever going to get anybody to like Israel when your only solution is to claim that they don't like Israel because they were tricked by Muslims, and that if they were just tricked by Jews first, it would all be better? Like, what is the argument here exactly? We'll be back on the other side to actually read in full the amendments that are attempting to merge the Israeli and American government. In the meantime, I hope you can support us. We have all new summer apparel. And I got to tell you, folks, I might be stealing another hat today. There are a couple very cool hats, very cool t-shirts. There's the, you know, Don't Tread on Me parody. That's Don't Spy on Me. And it's got that. I've got the t-shirt right down there. I could go grab it, but I'd have to get down. There's a performance fishing shirt as well with a 13-star Betsy Ross flag. The 1776 heavyweight shorts are now available. We've got brand new patriotic hats and limited edition summer tees that you will love. Get them now. TheAlexJonesStore.com/Harrison. TheAlexJonesStore.com/Harrison. There it is. It's the red hat with the eagle. All right. I'm stealing that hat too. I'm getting another hat from my collection. That is the second coolest hat I've ever seen. It might even be cooler than the first.
Introducing AquaPure, the ultimate water filter showerhead. Ladies and gentlemen, on your screen are the major third-party scientific tests. This is the very best, top-of-the-line water filtration system for your showerhead. It just takes seconds to be screwed on to any system, no plumbers. You owe it to yourself, your husband, your wife, your children to cut out the gender-bending chemicals that are in all the major tap water supplies. Most well water is contaminated as well. You can't just filter the water you drink. One of the biggest places you can pull the studies up that we absorb poisons is through our skin and through our lungs. The amount of chlorine in major water supplies is insane. You know, if you put fish in tap water, even if you aerate it, even if you feed them, they die within hours.
That's because it's toxic. That's because it's poison. Chlorine alone kills bacteria. Great, you don't get dysentery, but it destroys your gut flora, and it's directly linked to cancer. Then you've got the fluoride, you've got the lead, you've got the arsenic. This system reduces it all 95 to 95%. Now, we've got gravity-fed filters that cut it all out, but those are drip, drip, drip. This system is the very best on the market and reduces it from 95 to 99%, depending on the hundreds of chemicals that are out there in the studies that have been done. And that is the top of the line because it's forcing it through fast. It's got really good pressure, and you are reducing it down 95 to 99%. That is the best you are going to get if you live in one of these cities with the deadly tap water. And so many areas like Los Angeles are toilet to tap. They recycle the birth control and the Adderall and all the thousands of pharmaceuticals and the feces and the tampons and the microplastics all go back in, go through all these complex systems. They fill with all this chlorine, and then they ship it back out down your water pipes. And not to mention what's in the pipes and all the buildup. And then when sewage runs off, it gets into the water supply. You are insane if you're drinking tap water. And you can look up the studies for yourself. Almost all well water and aquifers in the United States are heavily contaminated with thousands of different chemicals like lead and mercury and arsenic and fluoride and other forever chemicals. So again, I can tell you forever, in my home, we have these systems, and it does hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of showers before it's got to be replaced. The head's not replaced. We have the replacement filters for $30. For this quality, nobody can beat it, and it funds our operation against the globalist. This is very, very competitive at the normal retail. Listen to this. Normal retail is $139, but for everybody, it's $97.99, that's 30% off. And for VIP, $69.99. That is a steal at that deal. So anybody buying anything at the alexjonesstore.com, whether it's t-shirts, high quality supplements, water filters, you name it, should be a VIP. It's $30 a month. Instantly get $40 to spend, special deals, special offers, and special sales on top of sales on everything. Cancel any time, so it's not even a commitment. You just get the better deals. We get to remind you of those, and we've got a lot of really satisfied customers. Over 90%+ reorder rate on our supplements, and it's starting to happen with our water filters as well because we've got the best deals, and it funds our information warfare operation. This is the best. You owe it to yourself. Secure yours now while supplies last at thealexjonesstore.com, and I want to thank you for supporting the transmission while at the same time making yourself healthier, wealthier, and wise. God bless you all. Now take action now.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
All right, welcome back, folks. We're going to talk about the war in Iran, the war in America here, the 7th and 8th front of Israel's war for global domination. By the way, do you know that my joke is becoming real? My joke about Israeli space lasers is actually becoming, I'm sorry, they're not Jewish space lasers. That's an insane QAnon conspiracy theory. You're an anti-Semite. What they are is space-based Israeli direct energy weapons, okay? Okay, you could say Jewish space lasers now. Okay, they admit it. The Jews have space lasers now. Israel wants to build space attack lasers now. As if its wars on Earth were not enough, Israel now plans to develop offensive laser weapons for use in space. No country has the ability to mount attacks in space. We must be leading the country and the world in this capability, Israeli Defense Minister Israel Katz told reporters at a press briefing last week. If we achieve this, it will ensure the advantage of deterrence, the ability to attack, destroy, and all other matters versus our enemies with large resources. Yep, that's how it always works. For sure. As soon as one person deploys a novel warfare technology, they win. Nobody else does anything. It's certainly not going to create a weapons race for space-based weapons. Nope, they'll win. Again, I swear, Israelis really do have this mindset. They're like, if we just kill the right person, we'll be safe forever. If we just get our hands on a nuclear weapon, we'll be safe forever. If we just build space lasers, we'll be safe forever. And it's like, how about you just stop fighting everybody all the time? That might bring safety. Have you ever thought about peace rather than war as being a method for safety? No, the answer is no. They've never thought about that. Trump retreat over Hormuz tolls suggests he's struggling to end the Iran war. Does it? Does that suggest he's struggling? To me, it's the fact that he's declared victory 47 times already. Shows he's struggling to end the war. Trump's latest Iran war demand lasted all of 24 hours and suggests a president searching for unorthodox ways out of a difficult position. On Monday morning, in a social media post announcing the resumption of an American naval blockade on Iranian shipping, he said that all vessels transiting the Strait of Hormuz, including those of U.S. allies, must pay a 20% fee to reimburse the U.S. for any and all costs necessary to do the job of public providing safety and security for this very volatile section of the world. It's a very volatile section of the world since we started that war, huh? The following day, he abandoned the proposal completely, offering instead that he would strike trade and investment deals with America's Gulf allies, implying the U.S. would offer them safe passage to the Strait in return. The abrupt about-face was the latest in the latest twist in a conflict that has now lasted more than 4 months, and despite a months-old memorandum of understanding that secured a temporary ceasefire and set up a framework for negotiations, shows no sign of ending. Because of Israel. Because Israel refuses to abide by... Like, this is one of the things. If you're informed, it's obvious to see, but like, if you were actually relying on these papers for your information, they just don't mention the most important parts. They just leave it out. I swear, this is one of the main reasons why everybody is so insane all the time. Like, they leave out the most pertinent part of the story. The important part of the story is the memorandum of understanding didn't work. We are now scrambling to desperately find some, as they put it, unorthodox way to end the conflict, because the orthodox way to end the conflict is that Israel has to stop bombing civilians in Beirut, and they won't do that. So now we have to try to come up with new ways of ending this war that Israel got us in the first place. They don't mention that. It must be confusing to be like, wait, we signed a memorandum of understanding, but what made it fall apart? They don't say it just fell apart. It just, yeah, things fall apart. I mean, what are you supposed to do? Things fall apart. That happens, you know. Nobody's fault. Is it lying? I would consider it lying, a form of lying. It's lying by omission. But you can't say they're telling an untruth when they just leave stuff out. This is one of the main tactics of the media. They'll tell you everything you need to know except the pertinent part that actually defines the whole story. So you're left feeling informed, but still, like, you can't quite connect the dots in your head. You're like, wait, but I think I'm missing something. Yeah, you're missing the main thing, that this is all for the sake of Israel. They won't mention that, though. Trump does not rule out ground invasion in Iran and suggests the U.S. will take Karg Island. President Trump on Tuesday sat for an interview with Fox News where he suggested that a ground invasion may be imminent in Iran and the U.S. may take over Iran's critical oil export hub of Karg Island. Let's go ahead and go to clip number one here. This is Gateway pundit Donald Trump in an interview yesterday. Let's watch.
So your objectives are to ensure that Iran never has a nuclear weapon, to keep the strait open, and to degrade the Iranian military. Can those objectives be completed in an air campaign alone, or does this require a ground component?
Well, I think they're completed now, honestly. If we left right now, it would take them 20 years to rebuild what they have. The only way you can negotiate with these people is through strength. And the only strength is military strength. And that's what we've done. And I mean, literally 2 days ago, we had a deal and then they broke it at the last moment. They broke it.
Will these strikes continue?
They'll continue until I say it's enough. I mean, they'll continue. They've been there. You know, the word the military likes to use is degrade. They've been degraded to a very low level. And they have fight. You know, it's like a great boxer. You think you have him beat, and then all of a sudden he comes back and he gives you a shot. They have some fight left, but they don't have much. And their weapon degrading has been incredible at a level. Nobody thought it was possible to do it this quickly.
You posted today on Truth Social comments that you made back in 1988 about Karg Island. And at the time, you said one bullet shot at one of our men or ships, and I'd do a number on Karg Island. I'd go in and take it.
Yeah.
Do you still intend to take Karg Island?
So I can't say that to you because if I did, it would be foolish, right? But it would be nice to make a little headlines, but it would be foolish. But I'll tell you about Karg Island. So we've already...
Are you ruling out a ground campaign in a limited capacity?
I don't want to say that either, but I would say no if I thought it was appropriate. I'd say sometimes you need a ground campaign, but we have other people that will do the ground campaign for us. But we already hit Karg Island, as you know, twice. Even three times. I said, hit everything but the oil. Just leave that little area from 25 yards out. Leave that little area. Don't touch the oil. Because I don't want that in terms of the world economy. It's a chunk of the world economy. So we haven't hit that. At some point we could. But I think it's unlikely. As far as taking it is concerned, if we degrade them far enough and deep enough back, I would do that.
You know, we could leave today. And it would take them 20 years to rebuild. We have no reason of being there. But maybe I'll put 100,000 troops on a tiny island where all of their artillery can hit. Maybe I'll do that instead. We could end it right now. We could go home today and we'd be fine. And it would take them 20 years and there'd be no threat. But I think I'd rather do a ground invasion, actually. But if you listen, I mean, you can hear little hints. And yeah, maybe I'm just imagining things, but yesterday... He told the Iraqi prime minister that he would be a great leader in the Middle East beyond Iraq. And today he's saying, oh, we have boots on the ground. We have other people to do boots on the ground for us. Okay, so it sounds to me like they're negotiating with Iraq. They're probably negotiating with the Kurds. They're talking to al-Jolani. We know he wants Syria to go into Lebanon. As I said yesterday, maybe they're deciding, can we afford that? Can we afford to have Israel continue to take a beating in Lebanon if we need al-Jolani's terrorist horde to go after Iran? So it does sound like we're trying to form up some sort of military force for a mass invasion using Syrians and Kurdish people and Iraqis. So we could just go home. We could just go home from the Middle East. There always is that option. U.S. and Iran exchange heavy strikes for fifth day as Trump warns he'll take out power plants next. The Pentagon opened Wednesday morning by announcing yet another round of strikes on Iran in what looks like a sustained action, also increasingly expanded to include civil and energy infrastructure of the Islamic Republic. At 6 a.m. Eastern today, U.S. Central Command forces began launching a wave of strikes against Iran, CENTCOM announced. The strikes are designed to further degrade military capabilities Iranian forces have used to attack commercial shipping in the Strait of Hormuz. The U.S. military further indicated it launched a seven-hour wave of strikes overnight. The evening prior, the U.S. reimposed naval blockade on Iranian ports alongside launching its fourth consecutive night of strikes on the country. A U.S. strike also hit wheat storage silo in Iran's Hawiyez province. They hit a grain storage silo in southwest Iran early on Wednesday, state media reported. So we have now resorted to the bombing their food supplies part of the terrorist operation. Meanwhile, the Iran war destroyed the strategic logic of the Abraham Accords. According to responsible statecraft, the agreements can't bring peace because they sidestep the root cause of instability in the Middle East. Abraham Accords were sought to succeed where decades of negotiations had failed by separating Arab normalization with Israel from the Palestinian issue. The effort bypassed the core concept of the 2002 Arab Peace Initiative, which explicitly tied normalization to the creation of a Palestinian state on its 1967 borders. The Accords made no attempt to discuss or adjust this principle. Instead, they discarded it outright. The American approach was based on an exchange of interests. The UAE and Bahrain acquired the security assurances they'd long sought to protect them from Iran, along with prospects for military and technological cooperation with Israel. Morocco secured America's recognition of its sovereignty over Western Sahara, fulfilling Rabat's longstanding demand. Sudan, for its part, was primarily concerned with getting off Washington's state sponsor of terror list and ending the economic and financial isolation that has long burdened the country. Each party had its demands, and Washington was ready to pay the political price of fulfilling them. So there's a couple things about this article. For one, you know, showing that the incoherence in the foreign policy when it comes to the Middle East, that we worked so hard and for so long and gave up so much for the Abraham Accords, only to have the entire underlying premise destroyed when we went and attacked Iran. And so we're trying to have our cake and eat it too. That doesn't work out in the long run. But the other thing is, again, another acknowledgement of all of the sacrifices America is willing to make for Israel. The Abraham Accords are about normalization with Israel. It's for Israel's benefit that America did all of this stuff. Just some of the things they mentioned here. But on top of that, all of the, you know, wealth and, you know, trade deals that we helped to assess, all for the sake of Israel. This does not benefit America. It disadvantages America. America had certain things that we gave up so that Israel could normalize with its neighbors, because we're their bitch, apparently, and everything we do is entirely and 100% in service of Israel. It's like cartoonish at this point. But yes, the entirety of Trump's foreign policy agenda for his first and second administration, his first administration was entirely on the Abraham Accords, meaning that America gave up all sorts of things that we were holding on to for the sake of Israel so they could normalize relations with their neighbors for their benefit. We did all of that only to blow it up when we again did something for Israel, went to war with Iran, which has, you know, destroyed all the other stuff we gave them. It's just, we are the giving tree. We are the giving tree. Israel is the little boy. Only at the end of the book, he burns us to the ground and says it's our fault that he was disadvantaged his whole life. Incredible. And it really just goes on and on. But yeah, like we there was a lot of stuff that America did to convince other countries to stop being enemies with Israel. None of it benefited us. It's all for Israel, our greatest allies. In the same way that Egypt is our number two recipient of foreign aid just after Israel, because we pay Egypt not to attack Israel. Like all of our foreign aid, all of our diplomatic gravitas, all of our warfare, all of our political, gains that we've achieved in the last 10 years has all just been handed to Israel. Like a baby being handed to Moloch to be consumed in the fire of their murderous greed. So I'm just here to tell you about it. Meanwhile, Iran sent message to J.D. Vance warning that Kushner and Witkoff were abusing their inside access to negotiations. During U.S.-Iran talks in Lake Lucerne, Switzerland in late June, Iranian negotiators sent a private message to J.D. Vance through an intermediary. The Iranians warned Vance that the continued presence of Donald Trump's special envoy Steve Witkoff and son-in-law Jared Kushner would undermine the chance of turning the June 17 framework into an enduring deal, a senior Iranian official told DropSite News. An Iranian official spoke to DropSite on the condition of anonymity. In the message, according to the officials, Iran conveyed to Vance that the pair were more interested in exploiting their insider knowledge of negotiations to profit in financial markets than they were in reaching a deal. Iranian negotiators also expressed concern about repeated leaks from Kushner to Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. And a U.S. official told Axios that since the negotiations began, Witkoff and Kushner talk almost every day to Netanyahu and the head of Mossad. They're Israelis. Do you understand? They're Israelis. They are aligned with the Israeli faction. They are top members of the Jewish mafia, the global Zionist criminal cabal. Like, they aren't American. They aren't working for America. They don't even have official positions in the American government. They're just Israeli agents, unofficially tapped by Trump, but working directly for Benjamin Netanyahu. And when you understand that this has been a persistent theme for Trump's second administration, that you had Mike Waltz coordinating with and collaborating with Benjamin Netanyahu to give him an advantage prior to his visiting the U.S. and negotiating with Donald Trump, that's called treason. I mean, he's a traitor. He should be executed for that. Instead, he was fired and demoted to U.N. ambassador for Donald Trump. But he was caught communicating with Benjamin Netanyahu in secret just before Netanyahu came to America to negotiate with Trump. Waltz was feeding him information and helping him get the best leg up. He is loyal to Netanyahu. He's loyal to his people. He's loyal to his nation, Israel and the Jewish diaspora. He's not loyal to America. It's why he leaked the signal chat to the far left Zionist editor of The Atlantic. Atlantic editor, super far left liberal. Mike Waltz in the Trump administration, inside the cabinet. In reality, both are Israeli agents. Both are trying to benefit Israel. Both are collaborating on this in coordination with the Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, who's also receiving and directing Kushner and Witkoff. It's a coup. It's a takeover. It's treason. And they're making billions of dollars off this information as well. And I, you know, look forward to the impeachment trial. Meanwhile, Israel approves over $400 million to fund 34 settlements in occupied West Bank. Again, an abject and direct and explicit violation of Trump's demands. The Israeli government announced on Tuesday it had approved a budget of approximately 1.3 billion shekels, that's $434 million, to fund the establishment of 34 new settlements in occupied West Bank. According to Israel news outlet Yonet, the decision was made by Security Cabinet in June, but kept under wraps over concerns about the U.S. response. Don't you love that? They're like, ooh, the U.S. is really not going to like us doing this. So we're doing it, but we won't tell them. But we'll keep it under wraps. We'll keep it secret for like a month or so. But in reality, what do they think is going to happen? What could they possibly do that could more outrage the American people? They don't care. They don't care. They should, because we should stand up for ourselves. Because when Donald Trump makes an explicit demand about the West Bank settlements, and that is clearly violated on purpose by the Israelis, there should be some recompense for that. There should be some punishment from Trump for that. But he's incapable, apparently, of doing that. So it's almost comical to me that they're like, oh, the Americans might not like this. It's never stopped you before. The latest approval brings the number of settlements authorized under Netanyahu's current government to 104 since it took office in late 2022. The government also approved the reestablishment of the settlement Sa'anur in the northern West Bank, months after Israeli settlers returned to the site, which had been evacuated in 2005 during Israeli's disengagement from the Gaza Strip. So yeah, they are ethnically cleansing the Gaza Strip, the West Bank and the Gaza Strip, the West Bank, of course, being the last population of Christians that have been there since the time of Jesus. But they're all being murdered and driven out and ethnically cleansed by our greatest ally, Israel, because they're evil anti-Christian scum who despise humanity. I think they despise humanity, and we can get back to that in just a second. In fact, we'll finish off with that, and then we'll get to the merger bills in the next hour. Pressure builds over Israel's treatment of Palestinian prisoners. This story from Wall Street Journal explains that. We can get into it. Like, do we really need to? Like, how many more reports do we need? I mean, it's the same thing over and over. It's like getting reports about Anthony Fauci hiding the source of COVID. It's like, how many do we need an investigation into this? We have it on video. We have their own admissions. It's been tried in court. They were found guilty. Like, what are we doing here? How many more times do we need to have it reinforced that the Israelis are psychotic murderers and rapists? I mean, it's just should be assumed by now. The Palestinians were enough. The Jason Jones Show. This is from the Jason Jones Show.substack.com. Condemning Israel's genocide in Gaza and advocating for its victims is no longer a lonely or risky business in American public life. It sounds almost silly for me to say that now, but honestly, the thought only occurred to me this week, ironically, after 2.5 years of nonstop work with the vulnerable Palestinians caught in the crosshair of Israel's military campaigns. I think my team at Vulnerable People Project and I may become a little slower on the uptake than the general public. The new AP NORC poll found just 1/3 of American adults, roughly half of the Democrats and 1 in 5 Republicans under 45, believe Israel has committed genocide against the Palestinians. Similarly, Gallup has found Americans sympathize more with Palestinians in Israel, 41% to 36%. Even among Republicans, sympathy for Israel has fallen 10 points since 2024 to its lowest levels in more than 2 decades. And we know, of course, that that is Brad Parscale's fault. That's why that happened. In other words, people now say publicly what could end careers and friendships only a short time ago. So it may seem hard to believe, but after the Hamas terrorist attacks of October 7, 2023, when Israel began its military campaign in Gaza, I balked. In this column, I'm unloading what went through my head in that moment and where my thoughts have led me since. He says, I immediately considered what the Vulnerable People Project could do for Palestinian victims, but that's not all I considered. I also allowed myself to weigh what standing in solidarity with the victims might do to VPP, and I understood in an instant that speaking out could put everything I built at risk. Donors would leave us, friends and allies who regarded nearly any criticism of Israel as a betrayal would cease to be friends and allies, might even become enemies. I'd spent decades in the pro-life movement where political lines were clear and many people I respected believed unconditional support for Israel belonged on the same side of those lines as advocacy for the unborn. The carnage that began in Gaza immediately after October 7th would muddy all of that. I knew that for certain. But I knew something more certainly, with a knowledge that lived deep in the deep part of my gut rather in my head. Refusing to speak out against Israel's violence would betray everything I had ever claimed to stand for. And this is just an extremely powerful article about sort of the personal experience of what it's like trying to stand up for what you know is right, to promote something that, you know, people are to be believed, you know, what they say about what they believe, then you should be celebrated and encouraged and upheld for the obvious anti-genocide stance and the realization that that's not the way it is. And actually, you got to weigh pros and cons of doing the right thing when you live in an extremely wicked and fallen and evil empire. Very powerful stuff. Please follow and help the Vulnerable People Project, the JasonJonesShow.substack.com, the JasonJonesShow.substack.com. Cannot support him enough, since he's actually there on the front line helping to get food and supplies and needed care to the Palestinians. Like I said, when we get back on the other side, we'll talk about the Israel merger bills that are being voted on today. But you've got to go to thealexjonesstore.com to get your summer apparel, brand new patriotic hats, limited edition summer tees. Let me just grab it. I'm going to grab it. Here's the shirt. Here's the shirt right here, folks. Don't spy on me. The new version of the Gadsden flag, letting everybody know where we stand on the topic of flock cameras. We think they should be thrown into a wood chipper. Don't spy on me. Just one of the incredible new shirts at thealexjonesstore.com. thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison to let them know who sent you. By the way, we still have the silver coins, the America 250 celebratory coin with the Crusader Cross on the obverse. These are selling out fast. Get yours now. TheAlexJonesStore.com/Harrison. It's collectible, keeps us on the air, looks great on a shelf.
My fellow patriots, the first thing the globalists and the leftists do when they want to silence you is go after your merchant accounts, go after your business payment systems. It's that simple. They try to cut off your ability to even receive money or make payments. If you are a conservative business owner, Google is watching you. Meta, Facebook is watching you. Amazon, all of the major big tech is watching you. If you think for one second that they are not orchestrating and coordinating their efforts behind the scenes to take you offline and out of business and render you harmless to the system and the machine, you are wrong. The question is not if, it's when Stripe, Shopify, PayPal, Square, they're all part of the same big tech machine. Because once there's only one central system, they can bring in the universal credit score. The head of BlackRock, Larry Fink, was very clear. Once they have the system in place and they're close, they are going to shut down everybody that isn't part of their system, even people that aren't political. This is about total control. They've just got to get to the patriots that are opposing them to get to you. And FirstUnitedPayments.com stands directly in the tyrant's way. My fellow Americans, this is your call to action. Call or email First United Payments now and ask them how you can protect your business against the globalist predatory attacks and shutdowns today. And talk to a real human here in the good old U.S. of A. by calling toll-free 877-899-1313. You've got to be able to have your own business. You've got to be able to operate without these globalist sharks, this mafia shutting you down. And First United Payments is the tip of the spear. Proven warriors, ladies and gentlemen, in this fight. Online merchants, this is the place for you. Now visit FirstUnitedPayments.com right now.
days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.